Welcome to the Joy of Leadership podcast. I'm your host, Dr. James Taylor. On this podcast, we explore the passion and purpose of leadership. Join us to explore lessons in leadership that demonstrate how you can live in the center of God's will. All right. Hey, it is my privilege to have Lizzie Sutton, teacher, myth, legend. Here she is coming in for her last year, which may I just say, every time I say that, I do get a little bit more depressed. And so, Lizzie, thanks for jumping on the show. Oh, we really do appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate being invited.
Okay. Well, hey, listen, let's chat just a little bit. We're gonna start where we're at, and then we're going to press rewind a little bit, okay?
Okay.
So give the audience kind of an understanding. How many years have you been at Hebron? How many years have you been teaching total?
Okay, I have taught 30 years in public education.
Okay.
And retired from that. And then I have taught at Hebron for 22 years.
Wow. So a total of 52 years.
Yes.
So far.
So far.
Now, I'm suspecting that this is only retirement number two. Are there plans? What's the next step? Kind of let people know what that next step is.
Well, I don't know until I get. We're moving to Montana, my family and I.
Where you're building a house.
We're building a house in Montana and moving. And I'm going to wait and see.
Okay.
Because if the weather was like it is in Atlanta, I would probably try to teach another year or two.
Okay.
But I cannot get out in that snow and the blizzards and everything. So I have already talked to the principal out there.
Have you really? I didn't expect anything else. Yeah.
Yes. And I have offered my services as a substitute.
Okay.
Or if she'd like to do a Zoom class like AP Calculus or something like that.
Right.
So I hope to keep my toe in the water.
Good for you. You could probably... I mean, just because I know schools are so short on subs, you could probably tie your substitute teaching to temperatures. Like, that's, if it's above a certain temperature, we can bring Lizzie in. If it's below that, not a chance.
Absolutely. And my son's got a four-wheel drive, and he works from home.
Okay.
So he's going to help me a little bit there.
Okay. Awesome. All right. So now let's press rewind. Let's talk a little bit about how what your early life looked like. How did you get into teaching? Why did you get into teaching? I'd love to hear that story. I know I've heard a part of it in our Steadfast series, but I would love to hear more of that.
Well, God ordained me to be a teacher.
I love that. Right from the beginning.
Right from the beginning. And I was lining up my dolls and calling roll, you know, before I could read. And my mother was a secretary for an electrical engineer, and she would bring home all this paper that she didn't throw away. And so I had all sorts of paper and supplies. And I always knew I wanted to be a teacher. And when I was in elementary school, I wanted to be an elementary teacher. And then I made it to middle school, and I wanted to be a middle school teacher. And then I made it to math, and I just loved my geometry teacher.
Okay.
So that's when I decided I wanted to be a math teacher.
So very much related to the experience that you had. What was it about that teacher that made that special?
Well, she was fun. She did activities, and that was back in a time when, you know, activities weren't as important as they are now. And she made it come alive for me.
Okay.
And I was just very impressed with her. She was kind, and, you know, I had some mean math teachers.
But I did too. I've had some mean teachers, period.
But I just liked the way she taught.
Okay. Now tell me, where were you born? Where was this?
Jacksonville, Florida.
Okay, is where you were born.
Yeah, I went to Terry Parker High School.
Okay.
Okay.
And was this, so the whole time you went to school, all in the Jacksonville area?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Cool.
And there was a point in there where we weren't accredited.
And really? At the high school?
At the high school. And I remember us and parents had to bring in books to try to get enough books in the library to get us accredited.
No kidding.
Yes, it was tough back then. I graduated in 69.
Okay.
And the 60s were a tough time for the schools back then.
Right. Does that school still exist?
Yes.
It does?
Yes.
It does. No
We're
kidding.
The Terry Parker Indians.
There we go. Are they still in the same building?
Yes. They may have changed the mascot, though, because that's not politically correct
right,
anymore.
Right, it's not anymore. Yeah, like Washington.
But
yeah.
I don't know.
Okay. But the school's still there. That's pretty impressive.
It's an antique.
So now tell me, so you said right from the beginning you knew that you were going to be a teacher. Is like what's from the beginning? What, how early is that?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, how early do you play with dolls and line them up?
So that young? Okay.
Yes. Right. That's what I always wanted to do. And I'm really into organization, so I was really tough on those dolls. You know, but I loved making out rolls and checking them and just, you know.
Okay.
And I had a fifth grade teacher. Her name was Mrs. Crane. And she let me be her teaching assistant. And I was in hog heaven because she let me file papers and just, you know, for me, it was a combination of the teaching and bossing people around. And I just loved it.
That's great. That's awesome. Tell me a little bit about your family.
Well, I have one son and his name is Scotty. And I have seven grandchildren. Mm. And his wife's name is Sarah.
Okay. Where do they live?
And they live in Jefferson.
Okay.
They're the ones that are dragging me to Montana.
Okay, great.
And my two youngest grandchildren will be going out to Montana. And the other ones, all of them but one, will have graduated from high school.
Okay.
By then. And my husband, I lost him to cancer when Scotty was about 9 years old. Mm. And so I haven't found the right man, so I'm just going to go with the singlehood.
Okay. It's never too late. I have learned that from other friends. Uh-huh. I have. I've learned that. Quite literally, my wife's grandmother, she got remarried and she was in her mid-80s. I mean, I've rarely heard of it. Her husband was in his early 90s. You know,
I don't see it in my future. Okay?
I didn't see it either, but you know, hey, you never know. The Lord's timing, you know.
That's right.
All right. So now, has Montana always been an allure for you guys, or is this kind of a new thing?
It has never been an allure for me.
I only know because we've had lunch together, and I knew the answer to that. But I find it so interesting.
About 4 years ago, my son and daughter-in-law decided they wanted to move to Utah. And so they started looking at land in Utah, but it was too expensive.
Okay.
So they lowered their standards and found some land in Montana, and they desperately wanted me to go because I think my son had a guilty conscience because, you know, he's an only child.
Right.
And I told them when heck freezes over because I'm, you know, I get cold, too cold in Atlanta.
Right.
And so they kept working on me. And then I made the mistake of going out there and seeing the land. And we purchased 4 acres out there.
Okay.
And once I saw the land, I was hooked.
I know you showed me the picture of it, and I could not believe the view that you will have every day of your life. It's just remarkable.
And the way I've got it figured, if I get too cold, I can stay inside.
That's right. Yeah. So. Growing up in Canada, that's kind of, you know, one, you have to layer. You learn how to layer. And two, listen, if it's too cold, don't go outside.
Yes.
You know, so yeah, it's just not a big deal. And so where are you guys in the building process? Are you almost done?
Okay. The outside has got the siding. It's got the roof.
Okay.
The insulation is in. Electrical is in. So we're about halfway there.
Okay. That is great. So when's the time of completion?
But hopefully at the end of May.
Okay.
And we'll be ready in June.
Okay. And that's when you guys are moving officially. Yeah. Wow. Unbelievable.
And I got it figured. I'll be crying the whole month of May.
Right.
Okay.
So right.
Just ignore me.
We'll be prepared.
I tell you, retiring for me, I never thought I could do it. I thought I'd have to be laid out. And this adventure of going to Montana is giving me something to look forward to.
Absolutely. And we need adventures in our lives.
We do, no matter how old. We really do.
Now, you've never been hung up over age the whole time, so is it okay if I ask you age?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Well, I'm 73 right now. I'm proud of it.
So I love this example, honestly, because I think there's such a mindset, particularly among kind of the younger and youngest generation. I was chatting with a young couple the other day, and they were talking about, hey, you know, we're going to retire when we're in our 50s, and that's kind of their goal. You know, I mean, I admire that, I guess, to a certain extent. There's a part of me, though, that just thinks, you know, wow, I want to do a job that I don't want to leave, you know?
Well, that's what teaching is for me. And my body is giving out before anything else. Mm-hmm. And so I have to be very careful. But I've told somebody the other day that my body and my brain may be slightly going, but my creativity has not.
That's right.
And I just got so much more that I still want to do.
Right. And there's so much that those in their 60s, 70s, and 80s still have to offer.
Yes.
Yes. You know, I've got a good friend in his late 70s, and he has said to me, he said, 60s were cake. He said, 70s have been hard. 70s, it's like my body just fails me, you know. Yeah. And yet for in this situation, he's still serving as a pastor, still working faithfully every single day.
But you ask anybody over 70, and they will tell you they still feel like they're 40.
Right.
My head.
Yeah.
Now I look in the mirror and that's not real close, but in my head.
I know I'm in my mid-50s and I still have to convince myself I'm not in my 20s. I mean, mm-hmm. I just, you know, but again, it's a lot of times my body that reminds me you are not in your 20s, you know.
Yes. Yes.
Well, listen, let's talk about the idea of teaching. And so I would love to kind of hear from you. How have you seen the process of teaching change? What is the actual process of teaching done over these last 52 years that is so different? And then really inversely, what has remained the same?
When I walked into my first classroom, it was a middle school math classroom. It was a big old-fashioned classroom with all the windows on one side of the wall. And I was given nothing but a textbook. And I remember my husband and I, we were so poor, and we went to the whatever the store was back then, and we got one package of green construction paper, one package of brown, and one package of red. And I put a big apple tree on the wall to have something to brighten up the room. But, you know, we were given nothing back then. I think my paycheck, I think it was $600 a month, but by the time home, the amount of pay you took home was about $450.
Wow.
And now, I mean, we're just given so much to work with and, you know, paid royally, I feel like. And, you know, those are the physical differences. I am frustrated as a teacher because when I started teaching, and for probably about the first, you know, 20 or 30 years, it was the responsibility of the child to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it's moving more to the responsibility of the teacher.
Right.
And that really frustrates me. These students and their parents, because it's the parents too, just, you know, they put all of the effort that needs to make on the part of the teachers. Mm-hmm. Now, we got some great kids who are self-motivated.
Right. We are fortunate.
And we are. And they do wonderful. But we have a small amount of students that, you know, just wait for the teacher to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little bit frustrating, but the curriculum has changed. You know, everybody doesn't teach what they want to. We teach what we need to because we, you know, we work together. When I first started teaching, everybody did their own thing.
Right. There was no alignment.
Right.
That was the thing that, I mean, and I've obviously been teaching a lot less than you, but even in my 31 years of teaching, it used to be, you just kind of did your own thing. They gave you a textbook. Nobody really cared too much where you landed in it.
You picked out what you liked
right.
to teach.
That's really what it
yes,
was.
You did.
You know, and now there's so much horizontal and vertical alignment. It certainly makes a better product for the student.
It does. It gives them consistency. And it just, you know, everybody's on the same page.
Right.
And we really work together as a department. And so much time in math. When I've been in department meetings, it wasn't about the curriculum. It was about everything else.
Right, right. Let's chat about the kids for a minute. I know we've talked about kind of the changes that have taken place for them. When you look past, kind of back into your 5+ decades of educating kids, are there certain big success stories that you look back to? Are there kids who are still coming back around to see you who now you look at them and you think, good grief, they're old too. You know, tell me a little bit about that. Cause I already know the answer to it because I'm here with you, but tell me a little bit about some of those success stories.
I had a young man and his name was Brian. And this is when I was still in public schools. Brian was very bright. He was in an accelerated class and he wanted to sleep all the time. Mm. And I do not allow them to sleep in class. So he and I had a raging battle for all semester. And he did terrible. He was so smart. He had a C. If he'd half tried, he'd had an A. And so we just came up with a non-peaceful coexistence and made it through the year. And then he graduated, and he was almost one of my examples of one of my failures. And I got a Christmas card from him 3 years later, and it said, keep up the good teaching. It's worth it.
Wow.
Now, this is a kid who thought I was the crappiest teacher in the world.
Yeah.
3 years later, I got a note from his mom. He had graduated with neurosurgery.
No way.
But he had brain cancer.
Oh, my goodness.
And he could not operate anymore. And it was probably more than 3 years later because he had been through med school. So he is now teaching at the Medical College of Georgia.
No way.
And I think it is so ironic that he is a teacher because he wasn't into it when he was in high school. And I've just had two or three. I had a young man who came to me in geometry. He couldn't hardly do anything, but he worked hard. And for 4 years, I was teaching little magnet school. I had him all 4 years. 4 years he worked his behind off. Mm-hmm. And he graduated from vet school at University of Georgia.
No kidding.
So, you know, there was an example of a kid who didn't try and a kid who did try, and they were both successes.
Right.
And the one thing I have found out, you know, even when I have, you know, get so irritated at a child because they won't work, is any one of these kids, these teenagers that people always talk about, you know, if I had a flat tire on the side of the road, every single one of them would stop to help
100%,
me.
100%,
yeah. Yes. They're just all good kids. But I think our society and our culture is enabling them, mm-hmm. if that's the right word, mm-hmm. to, you know, take the easy way out.
Yeah.
Take the fast way out.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it gets a little bit of tough.
Right.
When they're not taking advantage of their education.
Well, and you know, there are teachers who get frustrated with kids because they don't care about them. And then there are teachers who get frustrated about kids because they want the best for them. In some cases, it feels like you want it more than they do.
Exactly. You care too much.
You're the latter.
Yes.
You know, you're the latter. You are passionate about your students. I know you were in a bit of a car wreck, not just recently. You know, I was probably told about your car wreck by 30 different people and 20 of them were kids. You know, and I mean, that was, it really said something that, hey, these kids care about you. You know, when I was in the classroom full time, I used to say all the time that I'm not as concerned if you're getting an A. My field is English literature. There were a lot of kids who came through and, you know, they just say, you know, I don't want to read poetry. I don't want to do this kind of thing, you know. And what I'd always say, I want you to at least have a respect for it. Like, I want you to at least enjoy it. And I can certainly count back to certain kids that were so down on any sort of writing or any sort of poetry. And then you watch that turn. And with you, I know it's true that kids want to live up to the expectation of what you have for them, which is crucial.
Yes. And I guess that's another problem I have that's changed over the 52 years. I don't feel like I'm allowed to have as high expectations as I used to.
Mm.
And it's just part of the culture.
Right. Right. You know, one of the things that I had to adjust to is that when I first got into teaching 30 plus years ago, I could put my arm around a kid and say, like, you know, come on, you got this, you know? And I, you know, it was hard for me, you know, I'm in the classroom for 6-7 years and it got to the point where I could just tell, hey, that can't happen. Like, mm-hmm. you know, boys or girls, you know? And so I came to putting my hand on their desk. So it's still proximity control. But it's an extension of them, you know, so I would put my hand on the desk and that was something I mourned just because I do think kids need affection.
That's what happens when you turn 73. Now I'm the grandmother.
Yes. Now so it's okay for you to do everything.
Pat them on top of the head or on the shoulder, whether a boy or a girl.
Right. Right. So. Very true. Come back to, cause I want to dig a little bit deeper into the idea where you said that you knew beyond a shadow of a doubt right from the beginning that you were called to this. So talk to us a little bit about how calling impacts this career and frankly the careers that you've seen your other kids come into. We talk a lot about calling here. It's something that you relate to. Tell me a little bit about that.
If it's a calling, it's not a job. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean it's not going to be hard sometimes, but it's always what I wanted to do. And I love even the hard parts. And I think that goes to any profession at all. That, you know, if it's a calling, if it's what God has for the purpose for your life, then it still may be hard. But you want to stick to it. You've got a passion about it. You love it. Mm-hmm. Now, I think there are good teachers that don't have a calling because they're willing to work hard and they're willing to think, but it's the calling that makes it easier.
You know, the work ethic, I think, brings you through tough days But calling keeps you going in tough days.
Yes.
That when you have a call, like I'll see people with good work ethics who keep working, but they've, in many cases, they've lost their joy. Like whether that's temporarily or it's long term, somebody with a calling can go through a hard period of time with students or just with life and yet still have joy because they know that their calling is from something so much higher.
And teacher burnout, I think that has a lot to do with calling.
It does.
Okay, because when you know, as teachers, you know, when administrators ask something of us that we think is unnecessary, not that you would ever do anything like that. But
I might have been guilty of that probably. Uh-huh.
but you know, if God's called you to do this,
yes, that's right.
We know that we are to be respectful of the leaders.
That's right.
And just that point of view.
Right.
Makes it easier. Now that doesn't mean we don't fuss.
Right.
But it's just part of your calling.
Right. That's where I've seen through the years is that I only have three schools as a point of reference. But at all three schools I've seen that I've been blessed to work with some remarkable teachers. But that difference between just having a good work ethic versus having a calling, those people with calling are still smiling even on hard days because they know that they're doing it for a much higher purpose. You know, with that in mind, let's kind of chat a little bit about faith. Tell me a little bit about how you came to know the Lord.
Well, I've had a grandmother who was very, very, very much a spiritual grandmother. And my parents did not go to church. My dad had been in the church and they wanted him to be a secretary and he couldn't spell. And, you know, they wouldn't let him off the hook. So he got mad at the church. But they had me in church every Sunday. Hmm. They drove there and they picked me back up because they believed in it and they wanted me raised in the church. And I was about 10 when I got baptized and, you know, very active in church groups through college. Met my husband in college.
Where'd you go to college?
And Valdosta State College, when it was just a college.
Right.
And met him in college and we started teaching in Douglas.
So your husband was a teacher as well?
Yes,
he was. What did he teach?
He taught drama.
Did he really?
Yes, yes.
I never knew that.
He was a drama teacher. But the whole idea of church, once we got out of school and we liked to sleep late on Sundays. Okay, so I would say there's about a five-year period there when we went into heathenhood. Okay. And we were both saved Christians, and we both, you know, believed everything we needed to believe, but we just didn't want to get out of bed to go to church. And then we had Scotty.
Okay.
And then we went back into the church.
Okay.
And I realized that what my parents had done, you know, they made sure I was raised in the church. But we didn't take him and pick him up. We went with him.
Yeah.
And we went to church, you know, from then on.
And your husband was a solid believer as well, then.
Absolutely.
That's awesome.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. Yeah, faith just it just changes everything. It just changes that mindset. You know, it.
Well, everybody asked me how I could handle, you know, if I'm a good Christian, then, you know, why did my husband have to die and why did this and why did that? And, you know, I'd keep telling them, you could either do this with God or you can do this without God.
That's right.
And, you know, if I'm going to get through this, I need every bit of faith I've got.
That's right.
And he led me through it. And so
most of my life, I've been learning more about the passage that says, for all things happen to the good of those, for those who love him. And you know, pretty much my whole life, I've been understanding a new layer of that, a new level of understanding that, that when we're walking in alignment with God, he just changes our perspective on not just the good, but the bad as well.
Yes. And gratitude is so important because, you know, I'm not deserving of anything he's given me.
Right.
And he has given me so much. Mm. And it's just sometimes I just burst with gratitude.
Right.
And I think a lot of people, you know, miss that.
Right.
And it just, you don't. You're not. In fact, sometimes I worry that he thinks that I'm just saying thank you so I can get some more. You know, but he, you know, and I keep saying, God, I don't want more. I just want to thank you for what I've got. But
he knows your heart.
He just keeps blessing me.
Yeah.
And I think gratitude is very important. I started a gratitude journal the summer after my husband died, and it really, really made a difference in my life.
You know, I can see how gratitude plays a role in your life. there are, and I'm sure that you have friends who are older, there are sometimes people grow to be quite cantankerous.
Oh, yes.
You know, that they, and they feel like it's their right, you know, to maybe have a bad attitude about everything in life. You don't. I think that must be grounded in the idea of gratitude.
Yeah, and when you get that old, you just ought to be grateful you're still alive. That's you right. know? and I know it's hard when your body hurts.
Right.
But you got to smile.
Yeah.
And you got to be nice to people.
Absolutely. What brought you from the Jacksonville area to Decatur, Georgia?
Well, when we graduated from college, we were in Valdosta.
Okay.
And we moved up here to Douglasville.
Okay.
And then my mom and dad got sick in Jacksonville. So we did not want to have to change our certificates, our teaching certificates. Mm-hmm. So we moved to Waycross, which is just about as close to Jacksonville as you can get without, you know, and still be in Georgia. And then after my dad died, and Bob had been gone a while, then I moved up here because Scotty was up here at UGA.
Okay. Okay.
And so I moved up here to Bethlehem, and that's when I started at Hebron.
Okay. Okay. Tell me a little bit about, you have had an enormous impact on a school and on a village in Africa. Many of the things that are in that village are there because of your faithfulness. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the Village of Hope is in Liberia. It's in a little town called, and I have never learned to pronounce it, okay, Gota. It's spelled G-B-O-T-A. And over the years, a member of our church, Alma Flan, escaped during the Civil War in Liberia, and she asked me one Sunday, many Sundays ago, to help her raise some money for some mosquito netting. And it just absolutely blossomed. And we started collecting school supplies. And then we collected and enough money between the church, Bethlehem First United Methodist Church, and Hebron Christian Academy. And first we built a school. And then we built a church. They didn't have a church. And now we ship school supplies, uniforms, old uniforms, the store has been wonderful about if they order something and it's not right, they give it to the Village Hope. I feel like we could put uniforms on every child in Africa. They've helped us so much. Mm. And we've raised money to ship school supplies and food and clothing.
And every year, and it amazes me to see the footage of the village there that's, it has our name on one of the schools.
Yes.
You see all of the kids running around. They're running around in Hebron Christian uniforms.
Yes.
I mean, it's just amazing to see the impact of one person who's chosen to be faithful.
Well, it's not one person, okay? There's a right. lot of people.
A lot of people. Well, and that's your humility. I mean, I know that you have had, you've involved a ton of people in it, but it still takes that passion project for it to be something that's passionate for one person to be able to mm-hmm. see the need for that, you know, to really see what can take place. Yeah. So, all right. So we're heading off to Montana. We've got some substitute plans taking place. What are you most excited about?
I'm most excited about the scenery.
Okay.
Okay. And I'm excited about I've got a mother-in-law suite, the right. house we're building. And I'm excited about living with my younger grandchildren.
Yes.
Because, you know, my first set of four, you know, I had all sorts of energy, and we did all sorts of things. And now that I've had to tone down some, the, you know, whole idea that I can be in the same house, and if they want, they like to play board games. Mm-hmm. So I get to spend more time with my younger grandchildren.
That's right.
Because I feel like they've kind of missed out on the ninny that the other children had.
Yeah. When my family moved from Canada to the United States to just outside of Boston, the reason we moved is that my mom's parents were getting up in age, and they really needed a place to be. And there's just one daughter and three sons. And so, you know, they wanted her mom and dad to go with her. And so, anyway, my parents moved but I want to tell you, it was one of the best things ever. I would literally, it was during just before my senior year, which was a little bit tough, to move countries. But I couldn't wait to get home every day from school and get out and just sit with my grandpa. I mean, we just became great. Like, we were already great friends, but we just became so close during that period of time. And And he would tell me stories. So he was a sailor and a ship's captain for most of his life. So he had stories from all over the world and pictures, and he had snake skins. And I mean, he was just like this miraculous guy, you know, and your grandkids are going to have that experience where they get to be with you all the time.
I hope to. I don't like to cook, but I can just envision them coming home from school and me having cookies and something like
that. There
we
go.
So I'm going to be experimenting with new recipes.
There we go. Particularly on the snowy days when you're not substitute teaching.
So I can be a good grandma to them.
That's awesome. Now, have you ever been on a snowmobile?
Never.
Never? Do you think that is in your future, perhaps?
If I'm riding on the back with somebody else.
Yeah, there
driving.
We go. Of course. Yes. Lizzie, listen, it has been such a privilege to serve with you here at HCA. I'm blessed as an educator to have people that surround me that I can learn from, that I can really take pieces that I say, I want to emulate that person. You've been one of those people. You just really and truly have that your passion for the classroom, your love and passion for students and your fellow staff members, and just the idea that there's no retirement age, that you're still staying faithful. I mean, faithful. And that is such a huge lesson. All of those lessons are so big for me to be able to learn from and really emulate. So I've so appreciated your friendship, and I've appreciated your example.
Well, every school in the universe has problems, but I would not want to be anywhere else but here.
Amen.
Because the faculty, the administration, even the kids, when you get the most irritated at them, it's a family. And that's, I think, right. To me, that's the biggest difference from my first 30 years.
Yeah.
Okay, this is a family. This is going to be harder for me to leave.
Right.
That first 30 years, I cried, for a week when I had to, leave.
Yeah.
I'm going to be crying for a month.
Yeah, yeah.
And so
it's so much deeper when Jesus is at the center.
Oh, it is.
Anytime I'm dealing, life is conflict. I mean, you're dealing with different people. And I'll say to parents all the time, if we're going through something challenging, like, hey, listen, we're going to spend eternity together. Let's try to figure this out on this side of it, And again, you've just done it. You've done a phenomenal job of just exemplifying that for all of us here on staff. And so, Lizzie, thank you for your faithfulness. Thank you for your servant's heart, and thank you for the impact you've had on students and staff.
Well, you're welcome. I love it.
Thanks, Lizzie.
Okay. Wouldn't want to do anything else.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Joy of Leadership podcast. Living in the center of God's will is a rare blessing in today's day and age. Help us share this vital story of passionate leadership. If you would like to comment on the show, or if you know someone who would be a perfect guest, contact us at thejoyofleadership@gmail.com. If you like the show and don't want to miss a single episode, make sure you subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.